Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. There is a better way to practice architecture. When you build a thriving business, you will then have the time and the financial resources to do your best work, to design the architecture that you want to design. We've built a powerful program of resources, training, and community for you, the small firm architect. We'll show you how to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Entree Architect Academy. To learn more, visit the homepage at entrearchitect.com. You're listening to Entree Architect Podcast, and this is episode 179. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, FreshBooks, BQE Software, and Arcat. And I'm going to share a little bit more about these great companies later in the show. But before we get started here, take a quick note to schedule some time later this week to visit each one of them. Go check them out and let them know that you appreciate them supporting us, the Entree Architect community. Katie Hutchison, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
It's great having you here. Katie is an architect, an author, a photographer, and many other things. And she's based in Warren, Rhode Island. And she's passionate about residential architecture and specifically small projects, small houses and small projects. She's the author of The New Small House, which makes sense, seeing that she's passionate about small projects, published by Taunton Press. And she's working on a new book, which I'm sure we'll get into here. But I want to introduce Katie and let her talk a little bit about herself and share her origin story. So, Katie, go back to where you discovered architecture. What inspired you to become an architect? Give us 2 or 3 minutes of who you are, what you do, and share the journey from where you discovered architecture to where you find yourself today.
Absolutely. You know, I think, you know, my story is probably not unlike many other architects' stories. I think that we, as a profession, we're generalists. We have lots of interests and I think kind of naturally wear many hats. So I was not one of these kids who started off, you know, with my blocks and said, I want to be an architect someday. It wasn't something that came to me early like that. I had lots of interests, and early on, the interest that really grabbed my attention was actually writing. So I pursued that initially. I came to architecture after I already had you know, a liberal arts degree, actually.
Oh, interesting. So you started with writing and then discovered architecture.
Yes, yes. So I had, you know, throughout my early childhood and then early education, been very interested in the arts, not just literary arts, but fine arts. So I had done a lot of drawing and painting. I'd say I was very spatially aware. Like, the only design thing I remember doing early on was designing boats, actually, because we used to sail. And maybe that's where my interest in small spaces originated from. You know, hard to trace that back.
Do you still design boats?
No, not at all. You know, it was just kind of a small, intimate space. You know, again, I wasn't designing. I was designing the interior of boats, right? So not like the boat lines.
Yeah,
So I was just very focused on kind of that intimate space.
I ask because my middle son, my 12-year-old, is fascinated with designing boats and probably will become a boat designer.
He built a boat when he was a special specialty.
He designed and built a rowboat, 11-foot boat rowboat when he was 7.
Wow.
So it's never gone away. He just loves it and is designing boats every day. So it's why.
Well, he may end up in Rhode Island then.
Maybe, from your
Rhode Island experience.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a wonderful field. And I think that's the great thing about design is there's so many ways to branch off, you know, into your area of interest. So after I had a liberal arts degree, I actually went off to work for magazines. So I lived in Manhattan and I was working for Us Magazine, which is that celebrity magazine.
Yeah.
And at the time I had a friend who was an interior designer in Manhattan and she worked for Robert Stern. And so I had been in her office, you know, just kind of on social occasions, kind of meet up with her to go out and do things.
Yeah.
And I was pretty fascinated by what I saw in the office and what people were doing. And I ended up, I can't remember exactly how this played out, but I ended up with a temporary gig in the publicity department of Robert Stern's office, you know, for like a few months. I was filling in for someone who was out.
Yeah.
And while I was there, my job was to be in his slide library. And he does a lot of presentations, you know, at his school and elsewhere. And this is back, you know, pre-digital. So we had this enormous slide library of architecture from really around the world. And it was incredibly organized. And so I was supposed to, like, you know, pull the slides for these talks or whatever. And I would spend hours. It was like this closet-like room with all these drawers, and I would just go through the slides, and I would just like pick a destination. There was a big light table, and I would just pull them all out. And this was like in between me, you know, doing what I was supposed to be doing. So I think, you know, that just kind of triggered a fascination, and I was always, you know, mathematically inclined, and I thought, well, you know, this looks like something that would bridge my many interests and something I could grow into. I was definitely looking for something, you know, to make a lifetime career out of. And I felt like what I was doing at the time, you know, that wasn't going to be a lifetime career. That was kind of something that was going to play out quickly. After that job, that gig in the publicity department of Robert Stern's office, I decided to go back to school. And at that point, you know, my family connections brought me to Newport, Rhode Island. And I started to try to figure out, well, what schools are around here? So I tell you this story only because, you know, you don't have to have a prescriptive path, you know, about where you end up.
It's a fascinating story.
Yeah, I did not decide I'm going to go to RISD and then set out to do it.
Yeah.
I ended up, you know, in Newport. What schools around here? Oh, there's this school called RISD. So this was before they had a graduate architecture program. So they only had undergraduate architecture, and I already had an undergraduate degree.
Yeah.
So I got in touch with them, and I was like, so I think I called like the head of the department at the time. They had like a temporary head in the architecture department, and kind of said that I was interested, but I already had a degree, and what would they recommend I do? Not so much like, can I come to your school? I was really just kind of looking for advice.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, you know, we have people who come here with previous degrees. We call them transfer students, even though, you know, they've already completed their programs. And they are here for a shorter amount of time. So you kind of apply your credits that you already have where applicable, to kind of shorten your overall stay and come out with a B-arch. So that's what I ended up doing.
Yeah,
so
that's interesting. So sort of an unofficial, official, unofficial program that, that gets you into the official program.
Yeah, so there were a handful of us. Yeah. There were probably maybe more than a handful. There might have been like 12 of us, I would say, who came in this way. And what they did is, you know, the standard student route at RISD is you do a full year of what they call foundation. And that's studying cross-discipline. You're not just studying whatever you came to study, be it photography or textiles or graphic science. Everyone's mixed in, which is great. And you take together these foundation courses. So when you transfer in, you don't have time for a whole year to catch up, you know. So they bring you into a summer intensive, and that was our foundation. So all of us who came in that way did this summer intensive foundation program before we launched into, you know, what is the first year of architecture school. So it was, you know, I don't know if they do that now, right? Yeah. This is kind of like back in the day, you know, because now they have a graduate program and, you know, kind of why would they need this like intermediate thing? But for me and for my peers, so there were a bunch of us who were slightly older. It worked out really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so what did you, what happened from there? So before you get into that, for anybody who doesn't know, RISD is Rhode Island School of Design, R-I-S-D. RISD, and that's in Providence, Rhode Island. So people in the know, the design world, know RISD, but if anybody's listening who doesn't know RISD, RISD is Rhode Island School of Design in Providence.
Yes.
So what happened after that?
Such a fun place. So after that, I got married while I was at RISD, and so we knew we were going to be staying in Rhode Island, you know, in the short term. So I you know, started looking around for gigs, in Rhode Island. This was in 1992, which was a recession. So, and
that's when you graduated in 92?
Yes. Yep. Yes. So, you know, as we know in the architecture profession, you know, these recessions are cyclical and, you know, there's, you get kind of comfortable with the concept of working in a recession and looking for work in a recession. So I started at a firm in Providence that actually specialized in commercial interiors, which was not what I planned on doing, but you know, it was a start.
Which firm was that?
So it was called Benefit Street Design. Okay. It no longer exists, but you know, it was in Providence on Benefit Street. And you know, it was just a small operation. And we did a lot of office interiors. And it was actually a really good, you know, just it kind of worked out as a good place to start, kind of just learn, you know, like what's a set of construction documents. Because when you come in, you're just so green. And I was particularly green. So I had some really great coworkers/mentors, because I think everyone there had a little more experience than I did, even the most junior people. And so I was there not long. I like maybe a lot of other people, just jumped around a lot. So I worked kind of across New England for a while at many firms. And we relocated, my husband and I, a couple times. So that kind of drove, you know, kind of a series of job changes. So I worked out on Martha's Vineyard for a while. I worked in Manhattan. We moved to Marblehead, Mass. So I worked on the North Shore. And then we recently relocated back to Rhode Island.
And you're in Warren now, right?
So, yes. Yeah.
So that's sort of halfway between Providence and Newport. If you drew a straight line, you're sort of in the midpoint.
Well, we're kind of closer to Providence, which is part of why we chose Warren. It's a wonderful little kind of funky, artsy small town.
Yeah.
In Rhode Island.
Yeah, I love Rhode Island. I miss it. I went to school at Roger Williams in Bristol. And we still go back to Bristol often. Just sort of whenever we're running through town, I always sort of head off to Bristol to see how things are going, and occasionally I've spoken over there. So I love Providence, but I love Bristol.
Yeah, no, Bristol's fabulous. And actually, when I read to RISD, you know, again, because I came to Rhode Island with just, you know, not a lot of familiarity about what was here, I actually wasn't aware of Roger Williams. and became aware of it later. And of course, some of my favorite architects went to Roger Williams. But you know, at the time, it's funny how you get, I had kind of, you know, my blinders on and I just did what was kind of straight ahead of me.
Well, I mean, it sounds like from your background, it sounds like RISD was the perfect place for you.
It was. It was great. And so I also got my BFA while I was there. So because I've always been very interested in fine art. So I actually have three bachelor degrees. So I have no master's. I'm a bachelor of everything, but a master of none. But, you know, it was for me, it really was a nice fit.
So when did you officially start practicing?
So I went out on my own in 2002. And that was, again, you know, slightly a slightly soft economy when I went out on my own. And what I did shortly thereafter, because I really didn't have work lined up, it was more I want to be on my own kind of thing that drove me to go out. Not, you know, I have seven gigs and I'm going to go do them. So I actually teamed up with an architect friend on the Cape. We weren't a joint enterprise or anything, but we collaborated together for several years. And so that kind of helped give me some consistent work to kind of get me off the ground. But I also, and as you mentioned in the beginning, and I think we might discuss more, I have, you know, other things I'm interested in addition to architecture. And so my view or version of the small firm life is to diversify. And it's not so much that I'm diversifying in like the type of architectural clients I'm taking. I'm diversifying in terms of like what I do. So I started freelance writing not long after I went out on my own for fine home building. So I would write, I don't know if you're familiar, they used to have a drawing board column.
Yeah, I do. I remember.
So that was in, I think they had that in most issues.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I think I started submitting things for their houses, their annual issue. And then that became kind of a nice, I don't know if I can say regular, because it's not like I was committed to do it at a certain time interval. It was just something that when I had a break in my schedule, I would email them several ideas. So it was kind of a good way to both keep me thinking about design, but in a different way, and also kind of another income stream, though it is a very small income stream, and also a way to kind of build some publicity. So that's actually kind of what led me eventually in the book direction, was kind of the freelance magazine writing.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but you also started by saying that you started by writing. That was sort of your love, right?
Yes.
So it sort of brought it full circle and said, okay, you went and got that architecture degree, started your firm, and then still want to write. So you reached out to Fine Home Building Magazine and said, hey, I'm an architect.
Yes.
I write.
Yeah.
Here's some submissions. What do you think? So is that how you did it? Is you sort of found the editor, or did you know the editor through some other connection?
Well, I had a friend who worked for another publication at the Taunton Press. You know, they have many magazines. And so a friend of mine worked for Fine Cooking, their cooking magazine. And so she actually made some introductions for me. She was like, oh, you might want to talk to this person and that person. So I think my initial... Oh, you know what else I'm remembering? They, at one point, the Taunton Press was launching a new magazine. I don't know if you remember, there was briefly a magazine called The Inspired House.
Yep, I do remember that. I had a subscription to it.
There you go. So before that launched, my friend put me in touch with one of the people who was kind of beginning that magazine. Mm-hmm. I think that's actually when I first went in there. And I think I was trying to get a gig on Inspired House now that if I think back on it. And I had already done like one drawing board for them. Mm-hmm. So that's just the Inspired House. I actually never did write anything for Inspired House, but that was what brought me out for my first kind of interview at the Taunton Press in Connecticut. And then I just kept in touch with the fine home building people. And kept pitching. I basically would just pitch them an idea, you know, and sometimes they'd be like, oh, we did that idea, you know, 3 months ago, you know, something similar to that. So then I would pitch them another idea. Yeah. And they would just kind of, you know, they would look ahead at their calendar and try to figure out, you know, how to spread the topics around in a way that made sense. Or if they knew they had a themed article, you know, issue coming up, you know, could they drop it in that issue? So it was basically like that. I think most of the time it was me approaching them. Every once in a while they would come back and approach me. But then I would have scheduling issues, right? So if I was in the middle, I'm a sole practitioner, so I don't have staff. So if I was in the middle of a project, an architectural commission, then I would often pass on, you know, one of the article gigs, just because I didn't have time. So a lot of it had to do with schedule, what I could do.
Do you consider yourself an architect who writes or a writer who's an architect?
Probably an architect who writes. Because that's really my mainstay, yeah, is the architecture. You know, the writing is something I started off with, and it's certainly the writing that I do now is in a way in service to the architecture. Yeah. So I would say, you know, architect is probably the bigger hat. But I do, you know, I do enjoy wearing the many hats, and I do enjoy writing, but it is a certain type of writing when you're doing design writing for either a magazine or a book. You know, it's kind of in service to the design. Basically, it all comes down to being about design.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's from following you online and talking a little bit before we start. It sounds like design is where it all comes together, that all of the pieces come back to design, the architecture,
yes. Yes.
The writing, your photography, which we haven't even gotten into, but it all comes back to that you love design and that you love, you know, how that all ties in.
Yes. And I guess my thing about the word design is I think just the way it's used out in the culture is it's often associated with interior design. Like, yeah, we're leaving the word interior off when we're talking about design, which is not how I look at it at, yeah, all. So I see design as this big bucket that all these other things are in: architecture, landscape, interiors, urban planning, that all falls into the design bucket. So I always wondered why people said they did architecture and design. Right. To me, I was right. Like, architecture and design, what do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I think that's one of these things that's just out there in the culture. That's just, it is what it is. Kind of like the word green, you know, it takes on a lot of meanings. It means different things to different people. And it's kind of become a little bit fuzzy.
Yeah. And I think it has a lot to do with licensing law and the,
yep,
you know, people wanting to protect the word architect. And so they're very specific that when they're talking architecture, that they are an architect. And
right.
Because you can be a designer without being an architect.
And yes.
So I think that's, yes, sort of, yes, where we've lost the meaning and the impact of the word design.
Right,
design.
Right.
But
yeah,
because I mean,
it's the RISD School of Design. It's not the RISD School of Interiors. You, yeah, know what I mean? It's like, yeah, all the different types of design. And actually, you know, the graphics, the textiles, it's just, you're right. That is all in the design world. And I am fascinated and taken with all of it.
And that's the beauty of being a sole practitioner. You've obviously chosen that path as a sole practitioner, that you've chosen not to grow into a larger firm. Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect: FreshBooks, BQE Software, and Arcat. 192 hours. That works out to about 2 business days every month. And when you're a small firm architect using FreshBooks cloud accounting software, that's the amount of administration time that you can save this year. That's time that you can spend doing the things you love, like being an architect. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track time for your whole team by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, my favorite, get paid faster. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks to access FreshBooks for free, and be sure to enter Entree Architect in that How Did You Hear About Us section. One of the most often requested resources here at Entree Architect Community is project management software. I hear it all the time. how do we keep our projects and our people organized while we grow as entrepreneur architects? This podcast is sponsored by AIA Advantage Partners BQE Software. They are the makers of ArchiOffice. ArchiOffice is the only time tracking, billing, and project management software made by architects for architects. It empowers you to easily and quickly understand everything about your projects, your staff, and finances all in one place, wherever you are. And listeners here at Entree Architect Podcast can get a free 15-day trial of ArchiOffice at entrearchitect.com/BQE. That's entrearchitect.com/BQE. If you've been listening to this podcast anytime during the last few months, you've heard me talking about ARCAD. And hopefully you're already using their free resources on a regular basis. But for those of you who have maybe not checked them out yet, ARCAD's a great tool for small firm architects like you. ARCAD has huge libraries of free content, CAD, BIM, specifications, and more. And they've done all the work for you. You need a spec? Click on over and download the CSI three-part specification in multiple formats, all for free. How about a CAD detail or BIM objects? All free at the click of a mouse. ARCAD has tons of building product content ready for you to use, and it's all completely free. And you don't have to register to download any of it. And they've recently launched something new that I want you to go check out. It's called Charette. Create a project, assign tasks, share and collaborate with colleagues and clients in real time. Pull content from the ARCAD database, all that free stuff I'm talking about, you can pull it there and throw it into Charette. Anywhere on the web, found something out on the web, pull it in, put it into Charette. It all keeps it organized in one place, and you can collaborate with your clients and your colleagues. And this is free too. So visit them at entrearchitect.com/ARCAT, that's A-R-C-A-T, entrearchitect.com/ARCAT, and click on the Charette icon right there on the homepage to learn more. FreshBooks, BQE Software, and ARCAT. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. Can you talk about that a little bit, that your choice of becoming a sole practitioner so you can, there's actually a term that I like to use that's Jeff Goins, the author of The Art of Work, has coined. It's called the portfolio life. And you're a perfect example of that, that you're an architect and you're an author and you're a designer and you're a photographer and you've created this life for yourself to be able to pursue all of that and not have to only focus on one and the rest sort of our hobbies, that you are all of those things and you do live this portfolio life. And so can you talk about that choice of becoming a sole practitioner?
And I think a lot of things, like just like any other kind of career choice and choice in life, it just kind of evolves naturally from who you are, you know? So I've always been fascinated and interested and pursued all these different, design-oriented, I guess venues was the word I was going to use, but pursuits. And I enjoy moving between them. So I think it's also part of that I don't want to do just the one thing. I get a little restless if I do one of them.
Yeah.
To the exclusion of the other. So I very much like that when I'm done with the book, I go back and work on commissions. And then when I finish a commission, I have an opportunity to write something. I definitely like the change of activity. And I think even being a sole practitioner in itself, even if your practice was strictly architectural, there's so many hats you wear to conduct that practice if you're just one person. And that satisfies my need to kind of move around and do other things, not to the exclusion of one activity. So most people hate the administrative part of running an office. A lot of architects, I really don't mind it. It's like, okay, so, I've been designing for several hours. I'm just going to take a little bit of a breather here and do some PR, work on my blog or even doing billing. I'm like, you know what? I don't mind doing some billing right now, just to kind of move it around. Phone calls when you're a sole practitioner. You know, I think back in the day, that could be an interruption and kind of a problem. Like you're trying to get through your day and, you know, phone calls about all range of topics that people might call you about because there's cold callers and, you know, any range. That probably could have been a problem in the past, but now you can kind of streamline, you know, even your phone calls. You know who's calling you. You know if it's a client. You know if it's a vendor. You know if it's a contractor. You know if it's someone you don't know. So you're just kind of choosing how you're going to conduct your day to get done whatever on any given day you've decided is that day's task. And that, I don't know, that kind of flexibility just suits me.
Yeah, I think technology has allowed us to pursue a life like this as well.
Yeah.
That when you talked about the telephone, you know, there are systems now that will, you know, route them to different voicemails or send you a text message of what the voicemail was and
right.
You know, automatically respond to them. And, you know, there's so many different ways of being able to still serve your client, but without being interrupted. So it's, you know, we can use these different tools to enhance our lives in as, you know, as sole practitioners.
I mean, the fact that I don't have to have a product library, you know, back in the day, we all had, all the offices had these libraries and they would get outdated and they'd get full and you would never be able to see some of it. And just the fact that it's all digital is just wonderful, you know, really has made, you know, because I just work out of my house. You know, I'm not in some, I don't even have like a shared office space, you know what I mean? So, and I know that's what a lot of people do just to kind of, that can ease if you have like several architects sharing a space, or maybe you have an architect and a designer and another, like a landscape person sharing a space, you know, benefit from that overlap. But I can be in my house and still access, you know, an incredible amount of material, you know, in a moment's notice. So yeah, it is kind of a luxury of wanting to do this now.
Let's talk about the book a little bit. Let's talk about the first book. The New Small House is the first book. Talk about how, I'm assuming writing for the magazine sort of led to that.
Yes.
So yep, how did that happen? Because I think a lot of people have books in them. We've talked about this before in the podcast. Yeah. How did you get from writing an article to getting a book published?
So I was, you know, like these other folks you're mentioning, you know, I did have the bee in my bonnet that I wanted to do a design book. So I was trying to figure out, you know, how to make that happen, how to get my foot in the door to do such a thing. So back in like 2007, maybe, I started pitching book ideas to the Taunton Press. And I pitched them a lot of ideas, and you know, these weren't full book proposals. These were just kind of like concepts. And so they brought me in for a meeting. They were like, okay, let's just like have a meeting. That's going to be more productive than this like torrent of emails. So I went in for a meeting, and this was, you know, some time ago. This was just pre-recession, right? And we were going, the book, the concept that they liked, because, you know, for me, I might have a lot of ideas. They, the publisher, helps determine what is marketable, you know. Yeah. So they're very much looking at it, you know, understandably from a business, you know, what's going to sell point of view. So of the concepts that I was pitching at the time, the one they were interested in was a book about small retreats. And I had designed a backyard retreat, which was, you know, part of what kind of instigated this concept. And that's what we were going to do. And I actually had a book contract pretty much in the works on the desk of the publisher in 2008 when the recession kind of hit. So my book, along with some others, fell victim to the recession and was killed. Which is the term that they use, which I think is funny, prior to it kind of even getting off the ground. But I had made contacts with the editors at that point. So even though that was like obviously quite disappointing to have the book disappear, you know, I knew who to contact. I kind of understood the process a little better about how to get a book project going, a book proposal kind of in the queue. So then I continued to pitch them book proposals. Now, over time, like obviously the recession happened, there was no point in pitching something then, you know. Right. So when the economy started to improve, I started to, my onslaught of book pitches. And I had another meeting about another one. I can't even remember what that one was. And then one day, one of the editors that I'd been meeting with called me up, Peter Chapman, and said that they had a book in the queue, a title, but they didn't have an author because the author had fallen through. And it was going to be about small houses and did I want to do it? So again, this I tell you this story because this is not a straight path either. You know, so
yeah.
This, again, it just, you know, you kind of pursue what you want to pursue and keep working it and working it. And then, you know, in my case, that was a really good fit. You know, they contacted me because they knew of my smaller projects and they knew of my writing. And so that just fell in place. And the timing fit, that's the other thing. If you're going to do a book, it's time consuming. And so you have to have the opportunity or an opening in your schedule, you know, to be able to accommodate that. And at that particular time, I did. So it was, you know, it was a lovely thing that they needed someone. And of course, I had been pursuing them for years. So it came together quite nicely.
So that first book about the retreats never happened.
That never happened.
So
that's
when it's killed, it's literally killed.
Yes. Yep. Yes. So actually in the back of the new small house, there is a bonus, we call it a bonus chapter about small retreats. So we did kind of, you know, dip back into that idea to bring there are five small retreats in the back of that book, including the one that was part of my original pitch back in the day.
Yeah.
That could work out in another way also down the line. Like, yes, that exact book was killed. But as you know, architects are constantly designing and homeowners are moving and building new buildings and things evolve and move forward. So that's part of the fun of these books is there's always new projects to consider that people have recently completed. So who knows? Maybe someday there will be a book that's exclusively small retreats.
Yeah. And like you said, a lot of it has to do with timing that when your book came out, the tiny house movement was, you know, strong and the idea coming out of a recession, everybody's, you know, thinking, how do I be more efficient? How do I be more effective? You know, the big houses were starting to, you know, had some stigma to them. So the small house was popular as well.
Yes, so, which is why they already had the title in their queue, the publisher. You know what I mean? That's why they'd already decided, okay, we need to do a small house book, you know? And, you know, more and more I'm finding, you know, even for this next one that I'm doing, there were some other ideas that I had proposed. And, you know, I run these by my editor, Peter Chapman. And then he has meetings with, you know, the marketing and PR people and the publisher, and they're looking at it, you know, from a different vantage point, which is definitely market driven. So this next book, if I could just get in a word about the next one,
because
I am hoping that, I would love it if some of your listeners and followers might submit some ideas for the next book. So the working title of the new one is The Cottage Now. And I actually have on my blog, which is called House Enthusiast, which is at my website, which is katiehutchison.com. I have a call for submissions on there that spells out some of the specifics of what I'm looking for. And what I say I'm looking for, what we're looking for, I review all these with my editor and the art department looks at them. They kind of go through a lot of eyes when we're trying to select projects to include in a book. But the idea is kind of looking at what does the cottage mean now? And so we're trying to define it fairly broadly so that we have a lot to look at and consider to see if it falls into this bucket that we're going to call the cottage. And we're looking, they are smaller buildings for things that are between 1,000 and 2,000 square feet, but that's there's wiggle room there. You know, that's not completely hard and fast. That's just kind of a guideline. And if it's something that you as the architect or designer feel is a cottage, send it to us, because if you think it's a cottage, we might, and it might fall into our broad strokes of what a cottage can be. But I am trying to think of how the cottage has evolved. So it could be a new construction. It could be renovation or addition. But something that maybe takes the cottage in a new direction in some way that reflects where we are today.
So there's no specific definition of cottage for you. It's typically houses between 1,000 and 2,000 square feet. And if the architect feels that it's a cottage, then it's something that you'd like to take a look at.
Yeah, because we don't want to rule people.
Yeah, you might
I'm
lose
afraid
something.
If we
yeah.
make it too narrow, some great options right. won't even come our way.
Right.
I've had a lot of kind of casual conversations with people about the new book and what they think a cottage is. And it's been fascinating to me, like the distinction people make between cottage and cabin.
Right.
And the words that they associate with cottage versus cabin. And what does that mean? And what are the characteristics of it? And some of them have strong feelings about a location being associated with a cottage.
Yeah.
Some of them think about a certain material, a materiality is significant to it being a cottage. So it's kind of fascinating, the connotation that I'm just finding in like casual conversation with people about what they think of when they think of cottage. And so I don't want to kind of close it down
yeah.
when I'm calling for submissions, because, you know, that's actually the really exciting part, is when people start sending things in. Because it's also an opportunity for me and the publisher, and certainly the public down the line, to discover a smaller firm, you know, that we otherwise might not know about.
Right.
So, and certainly it's not like we're only going to publish small firm projects, because we certainly go to some of the more well-known firms that we're familiar with, you know, whose work may have been published elsewhere in the past, maybe most architects are familiar with. But it's great to have kind of, it could be a young firm, it could be a firm that's been around for a while, but I'm not aware of them. So it's always fun to see what comes in.
Yeah, well, I hope some of our listeners here out there listening have some cottages that they want to submit, and we can make a connection for you. So if somebody's interested, they can go to katiehutchison.com. It's HUTCHISON, Katie.
Correct.
Katie with an IE. So KATIEHUTCHISON.com. And there's a post there on the blog that talks all about the submissions, right? So basically you're looking
yes.
for some photos and a basic description through an email, right? At this point,
low-res photos.
Yeah.
You know, it's nothing. At this point, it's very loose. We want to see what it is. We want to hear like a little bit about it. You know, is it new? Is it a renovation? How big is it? Location is important, not just location in the country, but, you know, what is it in the country? Is it on the water? Is
right,
it, you know, like
right.
where is this cottage? And if you have a floor plan, it doesn't have to be a presentation plan, you know, just something that communicates plan. That's helpful. And so we just get all this low res stuff and sort through it. And then ultimately for the book, we try to get as much new photography as we can. So it is also important that the homeowner be open
right.
to having their project, you know, featured in a book. I will interview the homeowner. Some homeowners request that their names be withheld, which that works also. And it's obviously a good kind of opportunity for an architect to get their name out. But we have in the past, there have been a couple instances where a homeowner initially was okay with the idea of having their house included. But then when they learned
yeah.
about the new photography, they were like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So that is kind of a critical piece that we would like to be able to get new photography.
Right. So katiehutchison.com. Go check it out. You can actually go check out her website anyway. Even if you don't have a cottage to submit, go check out Katie Hutchison. It has everything that you want to know about her. Her architecture is there. Her photography, which we didn't even talk about, is there. And links to her book and information on submitting to the new book. I'm really excited about your new book because I love cottages. It's a piece of my mom and dad have a house that was built at the turn of the century on the St. Lawrence River, upstate New York, that I'm actually going to tomorrow
for
a long weekend. And it's a place where memories happen for me. When I think cottages, it's a place where my kids build memories and I make memories and my mom and dad, and it's a place where the family comes together.
Mm-hmm.
And I would guess that that's probably, for me, that's sort of the definition. Not necessarily the building type or the, certainly its size, although the Newport mansions were called cottages too.
Yes,
so.
we are leaving out something of that scale. Yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We won't have any Newport mansions.
Right. And so the definition is, you know, it's whatever, which actually leads back to that, is that for them, that is what that was. It was a place for them to escape the city and bring their families together.
It was very much a vacation place on the water. Like that's how that definition is.
So it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. If there's anything I can do to help you beyond helping get the word out about submissions, let me know. I'm happy to help.
Oh, I appreciate it. Well, this in itself is tremendous, because for me the challenge is just trying to find the projects, and so I so appreciate that you've spread the word for me.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that. We'll also mention it on the Facebook group. We have a big Facebook group.
Very
active with a bunch of architects on it that probably would be interested.
Great.
I just sort of want to sort of put a bow on this, because I think there are a lot of people who are listening and will see that you're the guest today and know your book and have that idea of wanting to write a book too. I think a lot of architects have this, dream of putting together a design book. And I think from listening to what you're saying, it started as connections, right? You made connections, small connections with small little commissions. And then timing was a huge part all through your story. Timing mattered. And then the other two pieces that I heard you say over and over again, and not specifically, but consistency and persistence, that you didn't give up. That if this one didn't work, well, I'm going to give you another one. Here's another one. If that one's not going to work, I'm going to give you another one. And I hear authors say that all the time, that it's not just the first book. It's not just the first idea. If you really want to do this, you have to make the connections and you have to be consistent over and over and over again and be persistent until somebody gives you a meeting because they're sick of your emails. And, you make another bigger connection and you never know where it's going to lead. So, so I appreciate you sharing that information, sharing that knowledge. I can't wait for the new book. Before you go, I want you to answer one question, and I didn't prep you on this, but I'm sure you can answer this. It's a question that I ask all my guests. It's what's one thing that an entrepreneur architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow? And it's supposed to be something that's sort of actionable, something easily executed and see some results in relative short time. You have any ideas?
Well, I think just, you mentioned kind of that I had, you said make connections from the beginning.
Yep.
And I can't emphasize that enough. And I don't think making connections necessarily means scouring, the architecture kind of network for connections.
Yep.
A connection can be anyone. I think a connection means getting involved in something that interests you, and not so much, I don't like to look at these things as like, oh, this is a network opportunity.
Yep.
I'm going to go do this thing. I think you should do things that mean something to you, that you want to invest your time and energy in. And if you join organizations, groups, committees, what have you, in a field of your interest, you will meet people who are interesting and they'll be interesting to you because they're in this field of your interest. And those contacts will ultimately lead you closer to what it is that you want to do. Maybe totally indirectly, completely randomly, you never really know how it's going to work out. But if you are your authentic self, you put yourself out there, do what you want to do, you'll meet other like-minded people who want to interact with you, and you never know where that might lead.
Yeah, that's a great answer. This podcast is a perfect example of this. This episode with you here, those are connections that we're talking about. I didn't even realize it until you mentioned that the drawing board is where I first discovered you.
Okay.
And I had totally forgotten that until you had just said that. But then from being on social media so often, you and I bumped into each other over and over and over again through social media. And, built an online, relationship the way we always do with these people. We kind of keep connecting and keep connecting and, we keep reaching out to each other. And then, I love your book and the idea of the new book, and I've been asking you to be on the show, and you have an idea now that we can talk to people about. And so here it is. That connection led to something for both of us. And so it's a perfect example of doing that. And that wasn't strategic. You know, I didn't want to meet Katie Hutchinson because she's going to lead me somewhere. And you didn't want to meet me.
Yeah, because someday you're going to do a podcast.
Right. Exactly. It was just that you were an interesting person. And so, you know, I wanted to get to know you more. And, you know, you follow me and it's look where it led. So, who knows where it goes from here.
Absolutely.
It'll be interesting to see if it leads to a submission that ends up in the book that may change some architect's life down the road.
Right, right.
I love how that works. I love it. Which is why I do what I do.
And I appreciate it. Yeah. Well, so thank you for having me on and thank you for spreading the word about the book. And onward to whatever is next.
Yeah, absolutely. So the website, Katie Hutchinson, Hutchison.com. Facebook, great Facebook page. It's Katie Hutchinson Studio. And Instagram, love your Instagram. It's where I follow you the most. It's KHS, so Katie Hutchinson Studio Instagram. So KHS Instagram on Instagram. So Katie, thank you very much for joining me here today and for sharing your knowledge here with the Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you so much, Mark, and thank you for your interest. I really appreciate it.
If you liked what we shared here today, share it with a friend. This is episode 179. So click in entrearchitect.com/episode179 and share it with a friend. And if you or someone you may know might be interested in submitting a project to Katie for consideration for her new book, visit, I put together a nice simple link for you. Visit entrearchitect.com/cottagebook. It'll send you directly to Katie's blog post that talks about submissions. But you don't have a lot of time, so don't wait. This episode will be live on Friday, July 21st, 2017. It's only going to be up for a week or two. Those submissions are only going to be open for a week or two. So if you're interested and you're listening to this around July 21st, 2017, entrearchitect.com/cottagebook. I would love to see one of you, one of the Entree Architect community, get published in Katie's new book, The Cottage Now. So go entrearchitect.com/cottagebook and go submit. Go share what you do and get yourself published. I'd love to see that. I would love to see that. Complete show notes and links to everything that we talked about will be at entrearchitect.com/episode179. And share that link. entrearchitect.com/179. Go send it to a friend, put it on Facebook, put it on Twitter, share it. That's the way we grow here. That's the way we're going to affect change. That's how we're going to make the world a better place through architecture. Hey, and don't forget to visit my website, our website at entrearchitect.com for information on Entree Architect Academy. That's how I'm trying to change the world. I am trying to make the world a better place through design, through you, through small firm architects, helping you build better businesses. I know you can build a better business. We've put together a program that we have resources, we have training, we have community. entrearchitect.com, no slash, right there on the homepage, entrearchitect.com. Get all the information that you want to know about Entree Architect Academy. Go check it out. I really want you to be part of what we're doing here. My name, if you might not know, is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I sincerely encourage you to go build a better business so you can do what you love and be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick. So when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.